In Vancouver, I am Plant on the Line. This is thecommentary.ca. The Bells is a new novel from first-time novelist Richard Harvell. It is a book about a celebrated opera singer who was born to a bell keeper in the Swiss Alps. As a boy, Moses Froben is affected by the bells, developing a gift for sound. He ends up meeting two traveling monks, and then he meets Ulrich, a choir master, who then has Moses castrated as he possesses a remarkable voice. The book tells the story, takes us through loves, marriages, and the premiere of one of history's most beloved operas. Richard Harvell is in Vancouver this day and joins us to talk about his story and this book, The Bells. He was born in New Hampshire and studied at Dartmouth. He lives with his wife and son in Basel, Switzerland. The Bells is published by Random House. His website is at richardharvell.com. Please welcome to the Plant Online program, Richard Harvell. Good morning, Mr. Harvell.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
You're very welcome. Thanks for joining us. Was that a serviceable précis of the book?
Actually, that was done very well. I think you managed to get several of the important themes of the book, certainly singing, but also the setting in the Swiss Alps is pretty important for me.
Yeah, you live there?
Yep, I've lived in Switzerland for 6 years now. In college, I had a chance to move to Switzerland for a year and lived really up very high on that, up in the Alps with cowbells out my window, and certainly that year was inspiration for the initial scenes in the book.
Yeah, what brought you there?
I really was just visiting a friend, and I fell in love with the landscape and got a chance to work there, and then I met my wife. She's from Switzerland, and that's what's kept me there.
And she's an opera singer?
No, she's not an opera singer, but she has sung some opera. She's actually now a primary school music teacher.
Yeah, and you have children?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we've got two children in Switzerland.
Yeah.
One that's just a four-month-old, which has certainly impacted my writing life in the last few months.
Yeah, I guess the writing has to go on hold, does it?
I wouldn't say that. In fact, I think the writing is so important to me that it sort of pushes out other things. It's getting the dishes done and the shopping done that really is a struggle.
Yeah. When you write a story like this, do you go back and think about sort of the backstory of the people? Like, do you think about Moses' father, who he was, who his grandparents were, say?
Mm-hmm. Certainly, that was. Certainly where the book started. I really knew that I wanted to write a story about a castrato. It interested me because I think they lived this extraordinary contradiction in the 18th century. Castrati were really the rock stars of Europe, and on stage they were such symbols of masculinity, and yet, of course, off the stage they were castrated and completely emasculated. And I wanted to write about this contradiction, so I conceived of this character, Moses. And then I had to work backwards from there, knowing that I wanted the book to end in Vienna in 1762. And I certainly worked backwards to his mother in the Swiss Alps and certainly a father. And then also for me, the bells are an important, were such an important, playing such an important role in Moses' youth that I sort of see them in a similar role to a mother or a father.
Where you live, and I guess in Europe, bells are more prevalent than they are here in North America, right?
Yep, absolutely. We even on the weekend, I think the first bells ring in our town at 6 o'clock in the morning, and it's hard to sleep if you have a window open.
Yeah, you obviously have to do a lot of research looking back at history and the sort, so that the story is plausible. The research into castration.
Mm-hmm.
What did that involve?
Yeah, well, one of the things that drew me to writing about this theme was learning that there exists no autobiography of a castrato anywhere, not even any journal entries where a castrato explains what it was like to live during this time.
Well, why do you think that is?
That's a great question. I think because exactly they had this contradiction in their lives, that they were worshipped on stage. And so they very much tried to hide their offstage presence, or if anything, they handled themselves like rock stars off the stage too, and sort of developed this presence of being godlike. There's all these stories of castrati with these amazing sex lives, which are certainly myths. They didn't have the ability to have sex, and so it's interesting to think where did all these stories come from if it was impossible for them to have sex. And, and I think it's that they really crafted them this themselves.
If you had to pull a contemporary, say, parallel to how big these guys were, these people were in terms of the culture, I mean, is it what genre of music, say? Is it like rock stars that you'd see, like people like Justin Bieber and the sort?
I certainly think that Justin Bieber isn't a bad parallel, but I think also it's important to realize how important opera was to life at this time. This was the kind of music that people had a chance to hear. I mean, if you live in a small Italian town, you maybe hear some folk music now or then, or you hear music in church. But other than that, opera was the only chance to have some connection to really this any kind of other kind of music. And so you can imagine if these great singers came to a village or came to a town, this could be the most important event of the summer for a lot of these towns.
And opera, it transcended the classes, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Particularly in Italy, of course, this was something that kings and queens went to, but this was also something that people from all classes would attend. And I think, interesting, primarily these castrati had roots in the poorer classes, and up to 4,000 boys a year were castrated in Italy during the 18th century, and most of them simply because their parents went to an opera, and they saw these gods of music, and they thought, my son can sing, I'll get my son castrated, and someday he'll become a rock star like this, and he'll save us from this fate we have.
And when did it end?
It officially, the last known castrato sang in the papal choir in Rome until 1913. So that's certainly the official end of castration. But really, that the heyday of castrati was in the 18th century and came to an end around 1824. And that was because of the rise of romantic opera. People wanted fewer stories of gods, fewer stories of these great heroes, and they wanted more normal people, and for that the tenor voice was more loved.
Does sound exist of castrati?
There's a few recordings. Unfortunately, they're terrible recordings of some of the last castrati to sing in the papal choir. They're made in 1902 and 1903. Unfortunately, they're such low quality that we really can't use them to understand what it was like to hear a castrato sing.
And in your mind's eye, you have a view of how Moses sounds, right?
I certainly have that some. I've listened to quite a few great soprani, female sopranos, and also quite a few countertenors, and that certainly helps to triangulate what these singers sounded like. But I think also in some way that I certainly don't even know, and I think that's some of the fun of writing about it, just to try to dream up what this sounded like with someone with these huge lungs. Castrati had larger lungs than even male singers because of their lack of testosterone made their bones grow extra long, but then also singing the notes of female soprano.
How much is music a part of your life?
As far as playing music, very little. I played some music when I was young. I used to play the trombone, but I think pretty badly. And I think this is actually an advantage in writing the book, that as my character learned to sing and learned about music, I really learned with him. And I think it helped me to write the book from this childlike perspective.
People must ask, why write a book about sound or about music, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a great question. I think music, as I said, though I don't play music certainly plays a role in my life. I'm an opera lover myself. Not only opera, I also love listening to Bob Dylan or Rage Against the Machine as well. And I think that I wanted to try to capture my love for music in a book.
I read somewhere about your how you got hip to opera music.
Mm-hmm.
It was in your mid-20s, right?
Yeah, right. I think like a lot of young people, I really hated opera when in my teens and early 20s. I really thought this was something that was sort of from a from a bygone age.
Yeah.
A kind of an art that I never would be interested in. And then my boss gave my wife and I free tickets to an opera in Switzerland. It was a 4-hour opera, in Italian with German subtitles. I can read German, but that sounded like a painful evening to me. And we decided we'd leave after the first intermission.
Yeah.
And we just loved it and sat through 4 hours. And I think I could have sat through more hours of it. It's kind of art form that I think bypasses the brain and goes straight to some other part of you. And I think you don't really need to know what it's about necessarily to find it beautiful.
Yeah, see, that's what a lot of people think that, eh? They think that because it's in Italian and one doesn't speak Italian, or it's in German or French or whatever, that you wouldn't get it or understand it.
Yeah.
Or enjoy it, I should say.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's certainly true. And I think I've even had the opposite experience, though, that I've listened to opera that I really love, and then I have gone to see it on the stage, and I finally understand what these aria are about, and actually I'm even disappointed once I understand what the words mean, and prefer sometimes to sort of just know the music.
Yeah. Do you have an iPod?
Oh yeah, absolutely. And I'm not a great opera lover. There's people that have thousands of opera. I probably have 80 different opera on my iPod. And I think I've been to only a couple dozen on the stage.
Yeah. And you also have Dylan and sort on your iPod too, right?
Yeah.
Have you always written? I know this is the first novel.
Yeah. Before this novel, I wrote quite a few short stories and also had some of those published. And I've done some journalism, particularly travel writing. Living in Switzerland has been good for that. I work for some airlines, for the in-flight magazines and things like that.
But it must be something to come out with your first novel, right?
Oh, absolutely! It's a great feeling.
Yeah, when you come up with a story, when you have that idea of writing about this subject, say, and you have to do the actual writing now, and you have to form the characters and the sort. I take it that Ulrich isn't a good guy.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah.
Absolutely not.
Do you have to like the character though, some way?
You know, I set out often to try to like very to try to write very unlikable characters, and I try to hate them myself. But certainly, as I write them, I always tend to get a little sympathetic to them. I can't seem to write anyone that's wholly evil, and that certainly happened with Ulrich, and it happened also with other characters in the book. There's characters who I set out to write as evil characters and turn out to be really quite good characters.
Yeah, I read somewhere as well, back to the writing, that you have these two readers, Alex and Bridget,
mm-hmm, yep.
Who you run your stuff by. Who are they?
Alex is a friend from college, and Bridget is someone that I've met in Switzerland in a writer's group, and then they both live far away from me now, but they've both been just such great readers because they, on the one hand, they know how to praise when it's time to, but they also know very well how to tell me when something's weak or needs changing.
And I also read, I think, in the same thing that I read about them, that they really liked this book, unlike stuff before.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. I think that was one of the most promising things that anyone said about the book, really, was that both of them, after being very critical of other stuff that I had written and never really giving their wholehearted praise to, really loved this book, and that was very encouraging.
And the critical praise for it has been quite good, hasn't it?
Yeah, it's been, until now, it's been fantastic.
Yeah, as a writer, and now as an author, do you what would you like out of the book? Like, is it enough that people buy it? Do they have to read it, or do they have to love it?
That's interesting. I think that as a writer, especially a writer of historical fiction, a lot of people seem to think that I'm writing this to teach people about some age, and that certainly isn't my goal. I'm not. I think that the best thing that someone can say about this book, and I'm happy that some people have said, is to really feel enchanted by this time period, sort of, if anything, to have this be sort of a chance to live among these characters and live among this extraordinary time period.
In terms of writing, in terms of your writing habits, do you write all the time?
At first, I really had to push myself to maintain a schedule. I would even write down day by day how many hours and what my goals were for the next day. And as I started to write more and more, it got easier and easier to sit for hours at my table. That's gotten slightly more difficult now that we have two children at home, but I try to maintain at least 20 hours a week. I think that's sort of this critical mass that I need to keep moving forward with the project. But if I have time, if my children don't disturb me and I don't have other engagements, I have no trouble sitting down. It's not a struggle.
Yeah, is the writing have to take place at home? Like, I mean, can you write in hotel rooms or airports?
I can do some. I can certainly edit in a lot of places, and I can certainly research. But in order to write, I really need I have my habits and a little bit of a ritual, like the kind of tea that I drink, it certainly needs to be quiet. I can't have any kind of distraction.
So no music playing in the background?
Absolutely no music.
No. Do you read while you're writing? Not while you're actually writing, but in the process of writing, say, a book.
Yeah, and I think, I mean, I certainly do my research. I try to do a good bit of research before the book. But then as I'm writing, of course, new ideas come up. And also, not only that, but just novels that somehow relate and theme to my book, I become aware of and read those. I think that's some of the great fun about writing about these periods, is that so many themes suddenly interested me that wouldn't have interested me before, whether it's music or 18th century history, or even something as simple as bells and how bells are constructed.
And do you read outside of your genre? Do you read outside of historical fiction?
No, certainly. Yeah. I read very little historical fiction.
Uh-huh.
Unless it relates very well. And I read some contemporary fiction, and I also like to read a lot of the classics.
What's next for you?
I'm working on a book that's set during Napoleon's invasion of Egypt in 1798, which is before Napoleon becomes Emperor of France. He takes about 35,000 French soldiers to Egypt and tries to take over the country, and it's a total fiasco. And my book is it's a love story set there in Cairo between a French gravedigger and a Georgian concubine.
And how long, when will that be out?
That's a good question. I've finished a couple of drafts now and then, but to put it in perspective, The Bells took about 16 drafts. So you could say I'm only an eighth of the way finished,
even though
the book is in a pretty solid state at the moment.
And does that surprise you that a lot of writing is actually rewriting?
I think if I'd known when I started this book, The Bells, if I'd known how much rewriting was necessary, I would have been terrified and maybe even turned away from it. But now that I've done it once, I understand that that's the only way it can work, for these characters slowly to come out and slowly to take on their identity.
And you write on a computer?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm not someone who can write. I don't write anything by hand. And I've never used a typewriter in my life. I think I certainly like to have it on a word processor, though I do print out some drafts so I can make copies by hand.
Richard, it's been a pleasure to talk to you today. And I haven't read the book yet because they didn't send a copy, but I will. It sounds like something that interests me and that I will pick up shortly. Congratulations on it. Continued good luck with the book.
Okay, thanks a lot. Thanks for talking to me.
You're very welcome. The website for more is richardharvell.com. The book is called The Bells. It's published by Random House. Richard Harvell, its author, on the line from here in Vancouver. I'm Joseph Plata.